the Texaco Star Theater. The more than 45,000 Texaco dealers from coast to coast welcome you to an hour of mirth and melody with our star comedian, Fred Allen, Kenny Baker and Portland Hopper, our guests, Dr. Rockwell, Maine's Ambassador of Goodwill, Wynn Murray and Al Goodman's Orchestra. Mr. Kine. Ladies and gentlemen, I bring you that popular author, that man about the Book of the Month Club, that new bum that burst on the literary horizon, Fred Allen in person.
Thank you, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. And Jimmy, what was that literary bum in your introduction? You meant bomb, of course, didn't you?
Oh, yes, Fred. You know,
wait a minute. I don't like the way... No, there's a way of saying yes, and that isn't it, the way you said it.
Yes, Fred, you know, I understand you wrote a book.
No, Jimmy, I merely wrote the introduction to a book. It's called Low Man on a Totem Pole. I wish I could write a whole book. A man who writes a book, Jimmy, leaves something for posterity.
Oh, Fred, what's a book?
Well...
just something you put under a baby until it's big enough to reach the table.
Why, a book is a wonderful thing, Mr. Wallington. Did you ever stop to think what happens when an author writes a book? Why, printers are put to work printing the book, bookbinders go to work binding the book comes out, bookstores put on extra salesmen, newspapers hire reviewers to pan the book, thousands of bookends are sold, people read the book, their eyes get bad, Oculus business booms, pince-nez factories open all over the country. Why, if enough books were written, prosperity would be permanent.
Yes, I know, Fred, but what does the author get out of his book?
Chronic malnutrition... and an offer to go to Hollywood one way.
Right. Well, you'd better stick to radio.
Well, perhaps you're correct, Jimmy. I'll get back to the latest news of the week. The Texaco News presents its highlight from the world of news. Chicago, Illinois. Prominent psychologist says that every woman of marriageable age in America... can lure a husband into matrimony if she will follow the simple psychological principle of moral dominance. To check on the important role psychology plays in modern courtship, Texaco News questions covey of marital victims to get their opinions. First, Dr. Rolton Swab. Now, what about psychology in marriages, Dr. Swab?
Psychology proves a woman can be 40, fat, and frowsy...
yes?
If she will follow certain psychological principles, she will snare her man every time.
What is the most effective procedure?
Well, the spinster must create a situation.
Uh-huh.
The man is led to make a statement or indulge in a harmless gesture that she interprets as compromising.
Well, how does the spinster create a situation?
Well, let us say they are sitting in the parlor jousting psychologically.
Jousting psychologically, yes.
The spinster says, "Oh, dear, my gaiter is unbuttoned."
Yes.
He goes down on his knees to button her gaiter.
Yes?
She says, "Bogart, while you're down on your knees, if you want to propose, it'll save you getting down again another time."
Diabolically clever. Bogart's goose is cooked.
And ready to be served.
Well, is it difficult to create a situation, Doctor?
No. It's simple, really.
Yeah.
The spinster can say, "Oh, dear, I have something in my eye."
Yes.
And he looks. if he is nearsighted and she has thick lips, they kiss. She faints. Touché.
Another triumph for psychology.
Yes. It is as I say.
Yes?
A woman can be 40, fat, and frowsy. While there's psychology, there's hope.
Well, tell me, Dr. Schwab, there seem to be more marriages out in Hollywood than any place else. Do the girls use psychology out there?
Well, they don't need psychology in Hollywood.
Why not?
Sweaters.
Thank you very much. A man with his own opinion on matters marital is Urquhart Pollen. Did psychology involve... I mean, you haven't got anything against barbers as a whole, I mean. I just wanted to know, Urquhart. Well, tell me, did psychology involve you in matrimony, Urquhart?
Psychology? What's that?
Well... I mean, how did you get married?
Oh, well, at first, I and the wife had lots of things in common.
Well, haven't you anything in common today?
Only one thing. We got a mutual loathing for each other that's nauseating to behold.
You share that among you. Well, then how did you come to get married?
That was the radio romance.
Really?
Yeah. My pleasure is going to radio shows and sitting in the audience.
Oh, it is, really?
Yeah.
Why?
Well, that's what I often ask myself, but I keep on going.
You get no answer, obviously. Well, that is all you do. You say you go to these radio shows?
Yeah. I start at 6 o'clock in the morning. All day long, I'm running from studio to studio. I ain't true till 12 o'clock at night.
You're not? Oh. But with this busy schedule, how did you find time to get married, Urquhart?
Well, I was going to all these radio shows.
Yeah?
And every time I come out of a broadcast, this same dame is waiting outside to get autographed.
Uh-huh.
Well, one morning, she dropped her Kleenex. I picked it up. We got... I see. We got something in common.
You mean going to these radio shows day and night?
Uh-huh.
So you got married?
Yeah. For 2 years, we was in heaven.
Really?
Getting up early, packing our lunches, going from studio to studio.
Well, what broke up this lovely romance, Urquhart?
A violent display of extemporaneous temper.
What happened?
Last Saturday night, we come out of the Green Hornet. She refuses to go to Truth and Consequences.
Well, why?
She wanted to go to Duffy's Tavern.
You quarreled?
It was a shambles. She's kicking me. I'm giving it to her, but good. Well,
you took your hat off while you were hitting her, I hope. A gentleman would, of course. Well, tell me, how did the rumpus end?
I let her up. I says to her, I says, all right, Mrs. Pollen, you go your way, and I'll go to Truth and Consequences.
Well, are you through taking your wife to radio programs?
We're going to one more show together. It's the blow-off.
And your farewell program is?
The Goodwill Court. I'm getting a divorce. Over 63 stations.
Well, I hope you get more laughs on the Goodwill Court than you got here tonight. And thank you. And now, Mrs. Tupper Shank, and your home, Mrs. Shank?
I'm proud to say I'm from Ferret Falls, Arkansas.
You say you're from Ferret Falls, Arkansas?
Well, it's really Upper Ferret Falls. It's the swanky section.
Oh, the swanky.
The swanky section has doors on the cabin.
Doors on the well. You're married, of course, Mrs. Shank.
I sure am, and I got a husband laying out in the sun to prove it.
Well, did psychology help you to get your man?
Psychology down our way don't mean nothing.
Doesn't mean anything.
Most girls who get a man has got to have stamina.
Oh, the girls do the courting, do they?
Most times. If a gal's pretty, she spills some catalog perfume on her calico and walks through the hills.
This is courting?
Yeah. The men stick their heads out the cabins to see what smells.
Yeah.
Then the girl picks the best looking head. He's hern.
Oh, that's how... That is how the pretty girls get their husbands.
Hey, the other kind, like me, has got to have stamina.
Well, how...
Seeing this Tupper Shank had to pass his cabin going to the well.
Yeah?
I cottoned to him. I said to myself, Fawn, if he cottons to you, you're as good as Token did for her.
And did he cotton to you?
Not right away. I kept passing going to the well, but Tupper kept paying me no mind.
Tupper was playing hard to get, hey?
There was my heart roasting on Cupid's spit, and Tupper wasn't aiming to give it a turn.
Well, didn't you try to get Tupper to notice you?
I tried everything. One day I come by, Tupper was sleeping by the woodpile.
Yes?
I took the axe, split and stacked four cords of hickory, stole away and left Tupper sleeping there.
Did he say anything?
Nothing.
Didn't, huh?
Next day I come by, Tupper's trying to fix a flat on his Model T. He didn't have no jack.
And you?
I lifted up the rear end so Tupper could get at him.
Yeah. Did he say anything?
Nothing.
Well, when did Tupper propose?
Not till 2 weeks later.
What happened?
I come by, Tupper was standing there behind the plow. His horse was laying on the ground.
Yes?
Curtsying first, I says, horse ailing, Mr. Shank?
Did Tupper answer?
He says, she's dead, and I was aiming to plow the lower 40. I seen this was my chance.
This was your chance, huh? Well, what did you do?
I slipped into the horse's harness and said, let's go, Mr. Shank.
Is that when he popped the question?
No, not yet. Long toward sundown, we'd finished plowing about 4 acres.
Yes?
Tupper unharnessed me.
Yes?
And says, take the bit out of your mouth, you're mine.
Then psychology didn't help you. Psychology didn't help you win your man.
No, sir. It wasn't psychology. It was stamina. I worked like a horse to get him.
And after you were married?
I've been working like a horse ever since.
Well, no wonder you came in on all fours. And thank you, Mrs. Tupper Shank. So, from Sippicology, we turn to the realm of song and Kenny Baker. Kenny's first song tonight is Maria Elena.
Maria Elena, you're the answer to a prayer. Maria Elena, can you see how much I care? To me, your voice is like the echo of a sigh. And when you're near my heart, and speak above a sigh, Maria Elena, say that we will never part. Maria Elena, take me to your heart. A love like mine is great enough for two. To share this love is really all I ask of you. Like falling rain to a plow, or like the shore to the sea, like minutes are to an hour, darling, so you are to me. This I can never disguise, here in my heart or my eyes. Maria Elena, say that we will never part. Maria Elena, say your heart. A love like mine is shares its love is really all I ask for.
Thank you, Kenny. That was very nice.
Say, Mr. Allen, is it all right if I leave now? I got to take a flying lesson.
Well, it's night, Kenny. You can't learn to fly a plane in the dark.
Oh, we don't use planes at the Analic Fly-By-Night Aviation School.
You mean that guy without a plane?
Sure. He does it with a barber chair and a broomstick.
You can't learn to fly that way.
Mr. Analic says I can. He says flying is as easy as driving a car.
Oh, a fig to that stratospheric imposter. If you want the word of a man who knows something about flying, ask Larry Elliott. How about it, Larry?
It's as easy to learn to fly as to drive a car. But whatever your opinion on that subject may be, here's a way to combine some of the thrills of flying with all of the thrills of driving.
And that is?
Just stop at a Texaco dealer for a tank full of Sky Chief gasoline and get acquainted with the nearest thing to flying power in ground travel. This Texaco premium gasoline gives you driving luxury with responsive power. Power to get you off when you say contact, lifts you quickly to cruising speed, yet throttles down powerfully to a smooth glide in traffic. And you climb the hills as if your car had wings. So let Sky Chief make you air-minded about driving. Fly the highway with Texaco Sky Chief, the premium gasoline for those who want the best.
Maestro Goodman and 25 men who have walked with Stokowski, not with him, but right behind him, have just finished coming through the rock. And now, ladies and gentlemen, hello, Portland.
Hello.
Well, now look. Now look, I'm very busy, Portland, unless you have something important.
Oh, I just want to show you my new dress.
It's very pretty. And now, ladies and gentlemen. Well, so it's a dress. If I were a moth, I might be interested.
But it's all cotton.
Well, so what?
You don't understand. This is National Cotton Week.
Oh, it's National Cotton Week.
Aren't you going to celebrate?
Why, I am celebrating, Portland. I've got cotton in my ear, so I can't hear these jokes I'm telling. I've got on cotton stockings to get even with a silkworm who double-crossed me years ago. And I can't get my vest off because my suspenders are cotton the lining. It's not good, but it fits. How smoothly it fits in there.
You're observing Cotton Week, all right.
Yes, and if you stick... If you would, it's better if I had a good joke that didn't fit in there instead of a bad one that goes right in there. Yes, I'm observing Cotton Week, Portland. If you'll stick around, I'll sing Bale, Bale, the gang's all here in just a minute. Well, so much for hilarity. Now, on with our guest. Show him in, Portland. He's waiting outside.
Oh, there's a man out there, but he can't be our guest.
Why not? What does he look like?
Have you seen those pictures? And underneath it says, send this boy to camp.
Yeah.
This man looks like the boy 20 years later.
20 years? You mean after he got back from the camp?
No, after they forgot to send him.
Well, he's our guest, Portland. You have described him to a T. Ladies and gentlemen, I would like now to present a man who has made an exhaustive study of humanity's ills and is prepared at this very minute to prescribe its cures, the one and only Dr. Rockwell.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, Doc, it certainly is a pleasure.
Now, wait a minute. Just a minute before we start, Fred. You've got to tell me what I do here. What is this thing here?
Well, this, Doc, this thing here is the microphone.
Oh, I see. And who are all these people sitting out here? These are not your relatives.
No. No, Doc, they're not. That's the audience. We call that the audience.
Oh, I see. The audience.
Uh-huh.
Yes. Now, who are these men over here in that goldfish bowl under glass?
The men under glass,
yes,
there? Well, they're technicians, directors, and vice presidents, you see. We have to keep them under glass like that because they mildew very easily.
Now we're all set. I hope you don't mind me asking so many questions, Fred.
Why, not at all, Doc.
You see, Fred, it's been so long since I've worked in radio, I've forgotten what these things are.
Well, you should have photographed the studio before you left. Well, why haven't you been working, Doc? No sponsor?
No, no, it's not that. I've just given up work entirely, Fred. I have a new philosophy.
You don't want to work?
No, sir. Work is the curse of this generation. Everybody works too hard. Now, look at you. You're there a nervous wreck. Your face twitching, your hands trembling. Those stomachs hanging down under your eyes. And why? Why? Because you work 18 and 20 hours a day putting these radio shows together.
Well, I know, Doc.
Now, look at me on the other hand. Here I stand, the picture of health, rosy cheeks, clear eyes, a firm hand, calm, radiating contentment. And why? Because I refuse to work.
But after all, Doc, everybody can't stop working.
Why not? All you need is a little willpower and no job. Here it is, Fred. Boil down. If you want to lead a full life, there's only one solution.
And what is that?
Join the Rockwell Layoff Loaf and Live a Little Longer Guild.
A person who joins your guild doesn't work at all.
No? Well, he uses discretion. Most men work so hard, they have to have a hobby to take their minds off their jobs. For instance, I know a bank president who collects lint.
Lint as a hobby?
Yes. He has a dark flannel suit. He goes around visiting families that let him hold the baby. When he gets home, he picks off the lint. That's his hobby.
Well, don't you have hobbies in the Rockwell Layoff Loaf and Live a Little Longer Guild?
Yes, but we reverse the process. When a man loafs and lays around, he's bound to overdo it. So he's got to have a hobby. And what's his hobby? Work. That's why I'm here working tonight. I'm indulging in my hobby.
Well, that is some philosophy. Tell me, Doc, do you think if people stopped working, it would solve their problems?
No, not altogether. There's other things that complicate modern life. People worry too much.
People worry about what?
Money. Today, people are worried about inflation. It's silly.
You have a remedy?
Yes, sir, and the solution is simple. What causes inflation? The government prints a lot of new money. People spend it too fast, and what happens? Inflation.
What is your solution?
You throw away all that old money, and you print up some Rockwell oomph money. What is Rockwell oomph money?
Well, I'll tell you. You take the money we're using today. Whose pictures are on those bills? Washington, Lincoln, Polk, and Andy Jackson. There's no sentiment attached to that money, and people spend it. They play the horses and pinball machines.
Ah, but with your oomph currency...
Well, on the $1 bill instead of Washington, you have Lana Turner.
Lana Turner on the $1
bill. On the $5 bill, Hedy Lamarr. And on the $10 bill, Gypsy Rose Lee.
Well, who is on the $100 bill?
Gypsy Rose Lee, but two choruses later.
Well, it sounds like a great idea.
You see, men won't spend that oomph money. They'll frame it, treasure it, keep it to look out on rainy days. Inflation is going to be stopped right there in its tracks.
Doc, you are a genius.
Oh, thank you, Fred.
Is there a... Now, tell me, is there anything else wrong with the world?
The world's all right. It's the people in it, Fred.
Well, what would you say is the greatest hazard in this country today?
The greatest? Well, I'd say the great American stomach. People don't know how to eat.
You mean too many people are on diet?
Not only on diets, they're overdoing it. I know a man who went on a parsley diet. For 2 years, he ate nothing but parsley. Today, that man is so full of parsley that every time he sees a salmon, he lays down beside it.
You a horrible case, I declare.
Yes, sir. Now, let me give you another case. A man went on a strict spinach diet. He overdid that. Today, he's got so much sand in his system, every time he sits down, he sandpapers the chair.
You don't say.
Yes, sir. Another man I know taking cod liver oil to get phosphorus. He's overdone that.
Are there any ill effects?
Ill effects? He's so full of phosphorus that every time he scratches his nose, it lights up.
In other words, people bring on most of their own trouble.
Exactly. They don't live right. People don't eat properly. One thing they're doing, they're mixing up their vitamins.
Mixing their vitamins? How do you mean?
Well, people don't eat their vitamins in order. A man eats vitamin A and then eats vitamin D. The stomach is down there wondering what's happened to vitamin B and C.
You know what I mean? Yes, I do. It's quite clear.
And the stomach gets all bewildered. It spreads to the brain and the man can't think.
Well, that sounds logical.
Now, you take the average man. Average man will eat raw carrots to get vitamin C and prevent night blindness, and then he'll forget to drink a cup of black coffee.
Well, why the black coffee?
Well, there's no sense in being able to see in the dark if the man doesn't stay awake nights to see what the reason is.
Wait a minute, Doc. How did we ever get involved in this? Now, you started off here a little while ago telling me I ought to quit working.
Oh, yeah. Well, the point is, Fred, why work? You're only going to make more money, and money is the source of all worry.
Oh, that's ridiculous,
no,
Doc.
No, sir. No, sir. I'll prove it, Fred. A boy leaves the country, comes to the city. He spends 50 years working like a dog so he can save enough money to retire and live in the country again. If he stayed in the country in the first place, he'd have saved the wear and tear on his system and the price of a round-trip ticket to New York.
Well, that is true, I must say.
Now, let me tell you a little story. I knew a Mr. X.
Uh-huh.
He lived a quiet life up in Boot Bay Harbor.
Yeah.
He used to fish a lot, but the wind used to blow the tobacco out of his pipe.
Uh-huh.
So finally, he cut the toe off one of his wife's shoes and clamped it over the end of his pipe to keep the tobacco in.
What happened?
What happened? Women tourists saw his wife with her toe sticking out of one shoe. They spread the word around, and women came from near and far to have him cut off the ends of their shoes so their toes would stick out.
And?
The open-toed shoes caught on. Business boom. Mr. X had to move to New York. The mad pace got him. Homes, memos, conferences. He had no time to eat. For breakfast, he grabbed an aspirin. For lunch, he swallowed a bicarbonate. For supper, he had heartburn. He ruined his stomach. Mr. X died at 38 and left $2 million.
A successful man.
Yes, but gone at 38. On the other hand, let's take a man we call Mr. Y. He's still up in Booth Bay Harbor.
Yeah.
He never done a day's work in his life. Mr. Y gets up in the morning, eats breakfast, and sits down.
Mm-hmm.
He gets up again to eat dinner and sits down. Gets up again to eat supper and sits down. You see, he keeps his stomach in one position. That's prolonging the result. Today, Mr. Y is 87 years old. He's cutting his third set of teeth, and he's still sitting down.
But if he doesn't work, Doc, how does Mr. Y live?
Well, once a week, he gets a small check from the government.
But where does the government get this money to give to Mr. Y?
From the inheritance tax of that Mr. X who went to the city and worked himself to death. See, Fred, QED money has occurred.
Well, thanks, Doc, for this illuminating dissertation on futility.
Perfectly all right, Fred.
Now, we intended to pay you for your appearance here tonight, but after what you said about... After what you said about money bringing worry and unhappiness, I'm not going to want to jeopardize your utopian status.
Well, that's all right, Fred. Perfectly all right, but... I've been doing a little thinking, too. You know, just because I haven't worried doesn't mean that I'm selfish. If I don't get that money, you're only to have more to worry about.
Are you worried? Talk another day.
No, sir, you've got a trouble.
Now, me bear my
trouble. No, sir, I'm going to relieve you of some of that trouble, and I insist.
In other words, money may be trouble, but as that trouble goes...
I can take it, Fred.
Something tells me you certainly can, and thank you. Now, ladies and gentlemen, the winner is in a new show at Yo City Music tomorrow and gets in a local workout tonight singing Cheer Up. Cheer Up, Win.
Don't fret because of rain. You'll get sunshine just the same. Cheer up, what is yet to come. You miss the boat today, there's that wrong way. Cheer up, for the best is yet to come. Just sing a happy song. Someone may come along. Heads up, can't you see that silver lining shining? You're not a millionaire. I've got a mile to share. But what's the kingdom? So won't you cheer up? The best is yet to come. In old Tibet, the people don't hurry. They live a century right through. They have an antidote for worry. I'll pass the secret on to you. Cause of rain, you'll get sunshine just the same. Cheer up, for the best is yet to come. You miss the boat today, there's another on the way. Cheer up, for the best is yet to come. Just sing a happy song, someone may come along. Heads up, can't you see that silver lining, shining? You're not a millionaire. But you've got a smile to share. Cheer up, what's the use of being dumb? So won't you cheer up? The best is to come.
And now a special presentation of the Texaco Roundtable.
Mr. Walton is not taking his place at the table. Purely a contemporaneous and undiscussed question of the experts. Head friend.
Thank you, Jim. Tonight, out of experts, he insists of only an expert. And what is your name, friend?
Jimmy Wallington, bud.
Oh. All right, Mr. Wallington. Here is the question of the week. If you have a car in your family, a well-behaved little car...
Yes?
...and you only catch that car smoking, should that car be...
No, Miss Allen. If your car smokes, it's been put enough...
You're sure of, Mr. Wallington?
Absolutely, Miss Allen. The maker of your car never designed it to be a smoker, for smoke trailing from the exhaust means trouble. It's frequently a sign of excessive engine wear. And all that can be done then to stop the waste of gas, oil, and power is a costly job. But there's something called every car owner can now. And that's to change to an insulated oil. Insulated Havoline. Texaco's premium motor oil that helps prevent needless engine wear. Havoline is insulated especially to stand up under the high temperatures developed in warm weather, where ordinary oils can break down and invite wear. Havoline is distilled, too, free from carbon-forming impurities that also induce wear. So if you want to take a big step toward preventing excessive wear in your motor, refill now with insulated Havoline at your nearest Texaco dealer. Theater continues after a short pause for your station identification. This is the Columbia Broadcast.
WAC, New York, New Dial.
Where's Mr. Allen?
Oh, he's out in the hall, autographing copies of his book.
Well, we don't need F.A. I can keep the show going. Ladies and gentlemen, that last number was Same Old Story, played by Al Goodman and his pie-eyed pipers. Oh, hello, Porty.
Hello.
Well, here comes Mr. Goodman.
Hello, Portia.
Hello, Mr. Goodman.
Hello, Kenny.
Hello, Mr. Goodman.
Hello.
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 Well, Portland.
Well, Kenny.
Well, Portland and Kenny. This is comedy. Even my orchestra is laughing.
Oh, we're a riot. Who says I can't keep this show going? Who needs F.A.?
You do, Junior.
Oh, hello, F.A.
Say, what's going on around here? All those hellos? It sounds like a telephone backfiring.
I was only trying to fill in till you got back, F.A.
Yes, Mr. Allen. We're waiting to congratulate you on your book.
Well, thanks, Portland. Only I didn't write the book. I wrote the introduction.
Oh, just the introduction.
In music, the introduction is nothing. Four bars.
Now, wait a minute. Just a minute. Don't underestimate my introduction to Low Man on a Totem Pole. An introduction is the most important part of a book. If people read the introduction, they can't help reading the book.
Why not, Mr. Allen?
Well, it's curiosity. It's like smelling a package of Limburger cheese. You know what's inside can't be that bad.
In night school, Goodman is learning all about writing. Very interesting.
Yes, it is. And all it takes is a pencil and paper.
In the Stone Age, they're not having on what to write. No pencils, no paper.
Well, they wrote in the Stone Age, didn't they?
What else? They are chiseling letters on big slobs.
Slabs.
Guys, Mr. Allen, now that you're an author, I guess you'll start smoking a strong pipe, wearing a beret, and letting your hair grow.
Oh, I don't think I'll go that far, Kenny.
You got a part.
Well,
you can get a pretty old attic cheap.
Well, I don't want to bother.
Oh, no bother at all, F.A. I can be out of there by tomorrow morning.
Now, don't break your lease on my account, Kenny.
Gosh, Mr. Allen, what if you become a famous writer and go to Hollywood and write a picture for Jack Benny? Wouldn't that be funny?
I doubt it, Portland. Not with that female impersonator you mentioned. I hear that Benny moved into the YW this week. He's living the part.
Now that you are mentioning writers, my brother-in-law is a writer.
What did he ever write?
Yesterday, he is writing Little Caporus in the fourth at Belmont.
All right. I'm not starting with you. Now, let's forget about writing.
But, F.A., you can't stop writing now.
Yes, you've got such a good start, Mr. Allen.
You really think so?
Sure, F.A. Now you're ready to write something big. A monumental work. A book the world is waiting for.
For instance?
The Life of Kenny Baker.
Oh, fine. The Life of Kenny Baker, or The Stoop Who Conquered. Some biography.
I'll take it. Hello? Just a minute. It's long distance, Kenny, for you.
Thanks, Forty. Hello? Oh, it's you. Now, look, brother. You asked me what to do. I told you. It didn't work. And that's your tough luck. Now, don't bother me anymore. That's final.
Gosh, is somebody pesting you, Kenny?
Yeah, you try to do people a favor and they're...
What's the trouble, Kenny?
Oh, it's nothing important. Now, where was I? Oh, yes. Why can't you write a book about me, F.A.?
Because you're still an adolescent.
Mr. Allen is right, Penny.
Certainly.
Books are generally written about a great love.
A great love? Well, why did you say so?
Penny, you had a great love.
Oh, I can see her now. Together we roamed the countryside, over hill and dale. All the fellows envied me. For in the whole village, she was the most beautiful. And she was mine.
Penny, I've never heard you mention love before.
One doesn't wear his heart on his sleeve, F.A.
No.
I can see her now, trim, graceful, the kind a fellow likes to be seen out with. Then came the heartbreak.
Penny, not...
Yes. One night I left her on the porch.
You can't write a book about a scooter. Why, a scooter only rates one paragraph in a Sears Roebuck catalog.
Roebuck, he says.
Yes, I said Roebuck.
A Roebuck is what you're renting in Central Park on the lake.
You mean rowboat, Mr. Goodman.
Don't encourage him, Portland. Let's not even give any outward sign that he is here.
Outward, you are putting on the Roebuck. A Roebuck with an outward motor.
And now, when we want an encore, we'll ask you.
Naturally. When you're finishing with a boat, you are throwing out the encore.
That's anchor. Anchor it is. And before you say it, my anchor is aroused to the breaking point. Now go away.
Penny.
Thanks, Forty. Hello? Now, look, you. You wanted some advice. I gave it to you. So don't come crying to me because it didn't work. And stop bothering me.
Kenny, who is that?
Oh, he's just a guy. He's nobody. It's nothing important.
Oh, you see, Kenny, that's just why no one can write a book about you. You're not important. The people you associate with are not important. You'll never be a book subject until you are important.
Again, that's... I'm going to tell that guy off once and for all. Now listen, buddy. You had an idea. You asked my opinion. I told you what to do and it didn't work. So you got yourself in a spot. Now don't expect me to pull you out of it. And once and for all, stop pestering me.
Kenny, for Pete's sake, who is that calling you on the long distance phone?
Oh, it's that guy Hess.
Hess? Why, of Hess, of all of you.
Yes, and he better quit calling me up, too.
Why, Kenny, I apologize. You're no nobody. You're a celebrity. I'll write a book about you. You know Hess.
Sure. I told him not to take that jump.
The jump? You told Hess the jump?
If he'd listened to me, he wouldn't be lying with that broken ankle over in Jersey.
Jersey? What is Hess doing in Jersey?
He's working at the Palisades. I told him not to jump off that high springboard in the swimming pool.
Kenny, what Hess are you talking about?
My cousin Seymour. Seymour Hess.
Seymour Hess. You did quite well.
Your attention I ask for a while to a song I'm going to sing you. It's about a pretty yeller gal I met while I was walking, and she threw such a glance at me. She was pretty and as sweet as a flower, such clothes you never did see. see the darling little bonnet with the flower garden on it, had the yeller gal that winked at me. Oh, my, she looks so sweet. And she dressed so neat with her kilting hooks and pretty little feet as she went skipping along. The pretty little yeller gal I met while I was walking, and she threw such a glance at me. As she skipped across the gutter, my heart went in a flutter for the yeller gal that winked at me. Voice would fail me, and foolish tears would flow. For bygone hours come o'er my heart with each familiar strain. I cannot sing the old songs or dream those.
Ladies and gentlemen, I am proud to announce that my sponsor, the Texas Company, has donated to the United States government the radio time it has purchased for the period from July 1st to October 1st. The Texas Company will donate this hour on this coast-to-coast network to the government to be used in any way it sees fit in behalf of national defense. In accepting this gift of time, Mr. Henry Morgenthau, Jr., Secretary of the Treasury, wired to Mr. W.S.S. Rogers, president of the Texas Company. I quote, "The Treasury Department accepts with pleasure your gracious offer of the use of your radio time over the Columbia Broadcasting System beginning July 2nd. Your government sincerely believes that through such cooperation and helpfulness as you have shown, the plan of saving for defense will become a reality to all Americans. Active participation by all of our citizens will assure for America a more solid economy and a more secure future. We will make good use of these radio facilities by bringing the radio audience a program of wholesome entertainment and of messages that concern every American home." Signed, Henry Morgenthau, Jr., Secretary of the Treasury, unquote. Today, Secretary Morgenthau announced that 257,646,000 dollars worth of defense savings bonds were sold in the first 17 days of the month of May. Don't forget that every defense bond you buy is an investment in your country. And now the Texaco Workshop players, ladies and gentlemen. Tonight they present a blood-curdling mystery, The Great Rumba Dancer Murder, or Who Killed Carmen Feitelbaum. The scene? The famous New York nightclub, the El Clippo. Her rousing rumba just completed. At a small table sits the flaming Latin dancer, Carmen Feitelbaum. Her dark eyes brood as the waiter serves Carmen a borscht Cuba Libra. Idly, she toys with the boiled potato in her Cuba Libra, when suddenly the lights go out. A shot is heard. The lights go on. The beautiful queen of the rumba lies flat on her tambourine. Dead. Who killed La Flemme, Carmen Feitelbaum?
Okay.
Quiet. Quiet, please. I repeat. Who killed Carmen Feitelbaum?
I repeat, who killed?
Now, just a minute. Just a minute, heckler. Who is fomenting that verbal sabotage?
I am.
Well, come up here just a minute,
you. I'll come up. Come on, man.
Now,
okay, Luther.
Now, just a second. Who are you two?
How do you like that? He don't even recognize us, Lou.
Quit stalling, Alan. We're Mr. and Mrs. Luther Snell.
Snell?
With an M.
That's what... What do you think?
The same joke he told the last time, Luke, remember?
Yeah, if you can remember them stale jokes, you ought to remember us.
Say, that's right. You two were here last fall squawking about radio.
Yeah, and we're still squawking.
Radio ain't getting no place. It's in a rut.
Well, how do you mean?
The programs is always the same. There's never nothing new.
Well, that's radio, sir.
That's what they all say. That's radio. Can't nothing different happen?
Well, I'm sorry. I've got to find out who killed Carmen Feitelbaum.
Okay, let's go, Mel.
Now,
okay.
Oh, now, wait a minute. Wait a minute, folks. Don't go away mad. Just what shows in radio upset you?
Well, them guys that come on at 6 o'clock in the morning with off-key singing and setting up exercises.
Oh, you mean those cheerio chaps, those early birds who sound like this?
It's 6 a.m. Happy Harry time, folks. Upsy-daisy, sleepyhead. Let's hop out of that little old bed and start our little old setting of exercises, huh? Now take a deep breath. Exhale. Well, here's our first exercise. Ready? Let's go. One, two, touch the floor. Three, four, up one more. Five, six, four high kicks. We're having fun this morning. Seven, eight, stand up straight. Nine, ten, and down again. 11, 12, rest yourself. And now we stop to inhale. Oh, very good, class. Some fun, eh?
There you are. There you are, folks. Is that the chap who gets your gold?
Yeah, he ain't human.
Nobody can be that cheerful at 6 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, always laughing. If only once that guy would say what's really on his mind.
All right. Now, let's see how Happy Harry might sound some morning if he really said what was on his mind.
Hiya, dopes. This is Happy Harry. Happy, I'm saying I'm nuts. Ooh, have I got a hangover. My mouth tastes like a mink just checked out. Any cluck who's up this early ought to have his head examined. Well, here's your first exercise, you saps. Don't open your windows. Take a deep breath of that same air you've been breathing all night. Ooh. Okay, here's your first exercise. Put both hands firmly around your windpipe. Now, as I count, you start squeezing. Well, let's go. One, two, give a squeeze. Three, four, squeeze and squeeze. Five, six, squeeze and squeeze until you drop down dead. Now, let that be a good lesson to you.
There you are. There you are, folks. How was that?
Well, that's more like it.
A pleasure.
Well, if that's all you want.
Hey, wait a minute. We ain't through yet. What about them commercials?
What commercials?
Where they're always telling you what they do to the product.
Yeah, what they do in the factory.
Oh, you mean this sort of message?
The housewives, have you tried Sweeney's Secret? The new scientific ketchup that is the talk of hamburger eaters everywhere? Each tomato used in Sweeney's Secret is scientifically ripened.
Each tomato is scientifically picked.
Each tomato is scientifically blended.
Each tomato is fired from a cannon in a factory.
Other ketchups tried to duplicate the superb flavor of Sweeney's Secret. They have failed. Why? because Sweeney's Secret is made by a special patented secret process. Sweeney takes each tomato personally. Sweeney goes into a dark closet. When Sweeney comes out, that tomato is ketchup. What Sweeney does to each tomato in that closet, no one knows. That is Sweeney's Secret. Buy a bottle tonight.
That is what you had in mind.
Yeah, who knows what's going on?
Who cares what Sweeney is doing in his closet?
Sure. Ketchup is ketchup, ain't it?
Yeah, give us commercials we can understand.
Oh, you mean something plain and simple like this.
Housewives, have you tried Chadwick's Chutney, the new tomato relish? There's no mystery about Chadwick's Chutney. Here's how it's made. Chadwick takes a tomato in his two bare hands. He wrings the tomato out into a bottle. It's Chadwick's Chutney. That's all there is to it. May I drop dead at this microphone? Chadwick wrings out a tomato. Housewives, if you want a chutney that's handmade, try Chadwick's.
That is what you mean.
Right. With Chadwick's Chutney, you know what you're getting.
Yeah, Chadwick comes right out with it. He ain't going into no dark closets doing things to tomatoes like a Sweeney guy.
Well, maybe you're right, but I've got to get back to my murder, mister.
Wait a minute. How about them double-up quiz programs?
Well, what's wrong with them? The prize money just keeps doubling.
Yeah, but why are the first four questions always pushovers?
Nobody can miss the first four questions if he tries.
What bothers you is this.
And now, radio's most popular quiz show, Take It or Leave It. And here is your master of ceremonies, Bob Craven.
Yes, sir, folks. Our Take It or Nothing quiz is off to a flying start. For each question the contestant answers correctly, his money doubles. Now, here's our first contestant. And the first question for $1, sir, what is your name?
Hyman Sherman.
Hyman Sherman is your name. That is correct?
Yes, sir.
All right. You have won $1. You want to try for $2?
Yes, sir.
Fine. Now, here's your second question. How are you feeling?
Dopey.
You feel like your look. That's $2. How are your folks?
Oh, they're fine.
$4. Have you got a match?
Yeah.
$8. How is the weather outside?
I didn't notice.
$16. Now for $32, are you nervous?
Yeah.
You certainly are, and that wins you $32. Now, Herman Sherman, do you want to try for $64?
Okay.
All right. For $64, what was the middle name of the fireman who was in the engine with Casey Jones the night Casey Jones made his last run?
Who is Casey Jones?
That is close. Casey Jones was standing right next to the fireman, right there in that there engine cab. What was Herman's name? It was Aloysius. Well, you lose the $64, Herman, but thank you for a grand try. That is what you resent.
Yeah, they horse around with them easy questions.
Yeah, when they get to the $64, they give you a brain buster.
And they're polite to the dope, a grand prize.
You mean you'd rather...
If a contestant's a dunce?
Yes, enjoy. $1, who wrote the Greek comedy Lysistrata?
Lysistrata?
That's right. Who wrote Lysistrata?
I don't know.
You don't?
No, honestly, I don't.
Why, you chowderhead, of all the cretins I've ever had on the program, your head looks like a skin popover.
I ain't getting no dollar.
There's only one thing you're getting. You're getting out of here. Beat it, jerk. Well, how is that?
Okay. That guy was a sap. He got told off.
Yeah, there ought to be more telling off in radio.
Well, if that's...
Look,
all...
have you got time for one more peep, Mr. Allen?
Well,
it's them theme songs.
Which theme song?
You know, them musical jingles that advertise stuff telling how good the product is. How about hearing a theme song that says how bad the stuff is for change?
All right, I'll have our house quartet, Three Clucks and a Yuck, render the first theme song. Give us that Shapiro Noodle theme, boys. 1, 2.
Don't buy Shapiro's noodles. They're not fit for poodles. They're cheesy and sleazy. They'll make you feel punk. They cook limp as jelly. They'll ruin your stomach. So take our advice, folks, and don't buy this junk. Don't be a chump.
Well, folks, are you satisfied?
You bet. Thanks a lot, Mr. Allen.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with radio the television won't fix.
Well, thank you for spoiling my program. Now, I won't have time to finish that mystery I started.
Hey, what's the solution? Who killed Carmen Feigelbaum?
Well, confidentially, Carmen heard our quartet rehearsing and committed suicide. Well, that's radio. And now, here is a news item on defense. Today in Tulsa, Oklahoma, the American Petroleum Institute, holding its 11th mid-year meeting, made an announcement of real importance. And if Larry Elliott will read this telegram received tonight, we'll have the news firsthand.
Quote, tonight, the American Petroleum Institute is happy to report at this meeting in Tulsa a full state of preparedness on the part of petroleum. America has over half the world's total supply of oil. Our reserve supply is the greatest in history. We have all the oil needed for the manufacturing stages of our defense program. We have all the aviation fuel we need, all the oil for the tanks, trucks, and armored cars, for the fighting ships we have today, or those planned for our defense in the future. End of quotation. Our nation again finds the petroleum industry ready, willing, and able to defend the American way.
Thank you, Larry, and good night, ladies and gentlemen. Good night.
This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.